Oh, yeah, you can quickly go around the lab and change the colour.
Svayam upakara mayam dadati svabadantikam namam vishnubhara kishabhista utalishi. Welcome everyone to our session number 2 of our topic of giving and accepting shelter, the foundation to Vaishnav relationships and devotee care. Or also we can call it our need for sheltering relationships. So I have the feeling we have some faces here today which were not here yesterday or this morning. Oh, good, good, good. So you're a little, yes, you're tuned in, so to speak. Yeah, because the seminar is so systematically building up, and if people come in the middle or at the end, then, you know, the whole foundation is missing and all that. So do we have anybody who didn't listen over internet? Okay. Oh, you also, you were not here this morning, yesterday? Yesterday you were here, no? Ah. Well, yeah, I'm afraid we just won't be able to repeat everything. Yes, yes. So in any case, in lesson 1, I tried my very best to deeply establish the urgent need for having sheltering relationships in our life, for, first of all, developing sheltering relationships with others and also reaching out to the inferiors and giving shelter. So these two topics are two principles of giving and accepting shelter. What's happening? Hey. So much restlessness here. Can we all sit down and shanti, shanti? Yeah, you lacking something? Some pens? Somebody put a whole bunch of pens here? The worksheets? Whew. Now I, yeah, quickly put that away, thank you. Now I tipped over the water. My water supplier, can you be so kind? I wanted to reach to the pens and distribute the pens, and I tipped over the water. I'm sorry about that. So now I'm the one who's creating the restlessness here. Yes, so we were trying our very best from all different angles to convince ourselves that this giving and accepting shelter is a very important thing in our life. We need these sheltering relationships. This morning, one main... Oh, don't worry about that. It's just water, huh? Or you think it damages the wood or something. The Bhagavatam, maybe take that away. Yes. One of the points this morning was that as long as we have material desires and attachments, we actually cannot objectively assess ourselves. We cannot really see where we are at, because the nature of material attachments and desires, they make us easily want to bypass, you know, some things which infringe on our material attachments. And we kind of like to cut corners and dismiss them. We feel them as uncomfortable and we dismiss them. And then very easily our spiritual practice becomes very imbalanced and we don't even realize. We think we are doing great, but actually we might not, and we can't even see. So that's why it's of the greatest importance to have such well-wishing, confidential friend who has no other interest than helping us in our spiritual development, We were defining today what it actually means, a sheltering relationship. So it's a senior, confidential friend and well-wisher who gives inspiration, who can give guidance, who is more experienced, who is like a role model for us, who has qualities which we don't have yet, and we are striving to, at least in some regards, become like he or she is. Very important to have such role models. They inspire us to move forward. But if we don't have that, very easily we just become stagnant. And we just, go through our life there in some humdrum way. But we are not striving to move forward. So very important that we have these role models in our life. And also, sheltering relationship means that person has no other interest except helping me in my spiritual development. No managerial interest, no emotional interest, no financial interest, simply my spiritual development. And also, my God, I really created some restlessness here. Now the whole cupboard is falling apart. Yes, and also a very important aspect of a sheltering relationship is that this person, we want to be corrected and disciplined by this person. Then it is truly sheltering relationship. If we fear this correction, even though it might be a little painful for the false ego or something, but ultimately we find it actually a sweet, loving exchange. Because from that person we accept that correction. Because we know that person is our dearmost friend and well-wisher. We wouldn't want to accept it just from anybody, but from that person we accept. And I gave the comparison, it's like a extremely hot but sweet chutney. You know, very spicy but sweet. So that's kind of that loving exchange. And interestingly, in Nectar of Instruction, verse 4, the six loving exchanges, where it says, Guhyam Akhyati Prichyati, in the purport to that, Prabhupada comments and he says, it means a more experienced devotee explains and a less experienced devotee learns from him. That's the loving exchange. More experienced devotee explains, less experienced devotee learns from him. So that's nothing else but giving and accepting shelter. That's the confidential revealing one's mind and speaking in confidence. That's what Rupa Goswami means, giving and accepting shelter. Not, I tell you what my husband or wife did or said, or don't tell anybody else. That's not the confidentiality what Rupa Goswami is talking about. You know, but we often misunderstand that. We think that's meaning confidentially revealing one's mind, but it's actually not, you know. So, yes, and we were also concluding that the two main keys of community development is, first of all, the deities being the center. Everybody's somehow connected in service to the deities. Deities, especially on festivals and daily worship, the deities are the center. But that's not enough. Sheltering relationships, this giving and accepting shelter. These two elements, if they are there, then a community flourishes and really takes off. But if it's only the deities, then still there's so much room for impersonal relationships and some dryness and lack of this caring spirit and. So, but if both of these elements are there, then a community very nicely develops. So this was basically a quick little summary, at least from this morning's discussion. So now you all have lesson number 2 in front of you, right? So now, tonight, I want to one more time try to convince you of this importance of this giving and accepting shelter, this sheltering relationships, from a slightly different angle. One more time, my last try to convince you, and then next session we go to some other topic. So, as a little introduction to that, I'd like to quickly look at the importance of service attitude. That actually, as we know, Krishna can't be understood by our material senses, by our mind, by our intelligence. But now, he can only be understood through our mood of service. Proportionally, Krishna reveals himself, right? He says that in Bhakti Mama Abhijanati. So one can understand myself only through devotional service. Or tesham satata yuktanam bhajanam pratipurvakam. So to those who are constantly devoted in service to me, to them I give the understanding by which they can come to me. So the way to understand Krishna is by him revealing himself. According to our mood of service, he shows himself, right? That's the process to understand Krishna. Also here in Katha Upanishad, he says, it is said, the Supreme Lord is not obtained by expert explanations, by vast intelligence, nor even by much hearing, even though we do stress hearing so much, but still we can't just by our strength and our endeavor of hearing force ourselves into transcendental experience. No, he is obtained only by one whom he himself chooses. To such a person he manifests his own form. So it's up to Krishna's sweet will. He has to manifest himself. And he does that. He's basically conquered by a devotee's selfless, pure devotional service. Right? As a devotee surrenders and sacrifices himself for his pleasure, for Krishna's pleasure, Krishna feels drawn to that devotee. He is conquered, he's controlled ultimately by that devotee. Srimati Radharani controls the supreme controller, not by telling him what to do and not to do, but through her service. Right? So, and Prabhupada always gives the example of the sun. You know, we can't demand all we want to see the sun. We get the torchlight there and show up to the sun. Where's the sun? I want to see right now. No, we simply have to wait until the sun shines. Sun has to reveal himself, herself, himself. I think sun is meant to be male. So, and then we can see the sun, right? So, and now we also have that verse in Bhagavad Gita, one of my favorite ones, Satatam Kirtayantumam, Yatanta Sadvita Vrata, always chanting my glories, endeavoring with great determination. So this service mood, one has to endeavor with great determination. This is really one of the secrets to success in spiritual practice. Whatever we may be doing, we have to endeavor with great determination. Try our very best. I remember once, many years ago, His Holiness Radhanaswami was speaking about this point, and he was giving this nice example, you know. He was saying, the heart is like a muscle. So when you train a muscle, when you go to the gym and you exercise, if you lift something which is really easy to lift, you can do this for many hours and there will not be much muscle growth happening. By the way, I am a qualified physiotherapist, so I can relate to this example. So, but then when you lift something which you can barely lift, endeavoring with great determination, you really go to your utmost capacity here. So if you train like that, then very quickly something will happen there in your muscles, right? So, and Radha Swami was giving that as an analogy. He was saying exactly the same thing is there in the cultivation of bhakti. If we do our service so-so, with some minimal endeavor, just enough so we don't get kicked out of the ashram or something, that kind of service mood will not bring about bhakti. Only if we endeavor to our utmost capacity, really doing things the best we somehow can. Doesn't matter what we do, whether we clean the floor, dress the deities, cook this, that, you know, whatever we may be doing, that is secondary what we are doing. Because Krishna is interested in the love and devotion with which we offer our service. So the service is actually just the packaging of the love and devotion. And Krishna accepts the love and devotion. That's what he's interested in. He's not impressed with the external offering there, you know. So if we endeavor with great determination, that brings about bhakti in the heart, you see. So that's pretty important to understand, because if we just lead some humdrum life of just, doing something, you know, okay, some with 5%, 10% endeavor or something, that kind of service mood will not transform the heart, because the heart is not even involved actually. You know, we just might be doing it mechanically out of duty or something. But no, the heart is only involved if we do our very best with that mood of wanting to please the devotees, Guru, Prabhupada, Krishna. With that desire of wanting to please, we do our very best. Then the heart is involved. And then that kind of service mood brings about bhakti very quickly. Right? There is one verse here, where is it? Guruda Purana also confirms that. It says there, the word bhakti is derived from the root verb form bhaj. And the verbal root bhaj means to render service. That's why Prabhupada translated the word bhakti as devotional service. Very down to earth, you know? Very practical. Other spiritual groups might translate it differently as divine love or something. But no, Prabhupada was always saying, to love means to serve. Yes. So, bhakti comes from the root verb form bhaj, and it means rendering service. Therefore, thoughtful sadhakas should engage in the service to Sri Krishna with great endeavor. Here we have it again. For it is only by such service that bhakti is born. Good to be clear in this. You know? It doesn't matter what we do, even our chanting. If we don't do this chanting with great endeavor, really trying our very best to concentrate, to call out to Krishna, and if it's just some ritualistic, monotone, you know, mechanical thing there, this will not do anything to the heart, you know. Just by the way, next weekend we are having a holy name retreat in Lika. And I'd like to take the opportunity to invite you to come. Next week, Friday, is the day of arrival. It's the Easter weekend, next weekend. And then Saturday, Sunday, and half the Monday, 2.5 days Holy Name Retreat. And Monday after lunch is time of departure. If you want to get more info, you can check out my website, theholynameretreat.net. You will find all the infos, theholynameretreat.net. And we offer it all on donation basis. Very nice experience. I'm doing these retreats in many parts of the world. In Echo Chakra, I do it every year. Nityananda's birthplace. Very, very sweet experience. And we've had it in Canada and Ukraine and Germany and so many places. So, and I'm taking my audience on a whole journey there. You also get a folder with printed materials, and I present things, and then we apply, we do different exercises in japa, in kirtan. Then we apply in evening kirtans, again, what we discussed during the day, with little role plays, how to chant, how not to chant in japa, in kirtan. So it's a pretty nice eye-opening experience. Some devotees, and I'm not saying that to glorify myself or something, but some devotees really gave me this feedback that this was a life-changing experience. And I even had Prabhupada disciples there. Actually, once Chandramuli Swami came to Echo Chakra. He was taking part in the role plays too. Oh, and it was so funny. Yeah, we had a good time there. Yeah, so, but I had Prabhupada disciples in the Holy Name retreat who were almost breaking out in tears at the end and saying, "Ah, I have been doing something else for the last 40 years. I have not been chanting the Holy Name. I've been doing something else." Yes. It was, oh my God, it was like a whole earthquake for them, you know. Yeah, so I would feel so honored and pleased if I would meet some of you there again and would get another chance to serve you there. And we offer it all on donation basis. So come and be my guest. You've been to Lika? Any of you? It's a nice place. There's this family, Murari Gupta Prabhu and his wife Sundari Manuji, and they have a nice setup there, and you know, they're really hospitable, they like to feed the devotees and everything, you know. So, yeah, come and check it out, it's a nice experience. Anyway, let's get back to our topic here. Yeah, so whatever we do, we have to do it with great endeavor, in that mood of wanting to please the devotees, and that kind of service mood brings about bhakti in the heart. Right? So now, in order to really be able to serve in that mood of endeavoring and really serving with heart and soul, putting our heart into it, giving our very best, our everything, we actually need to be sheltered. If we don't feel sheltered and protected, almost impossible to serve with heart and soul. Does that make sense? Because when we serve with heart and soul, when we really invest our heart in service, we actually put ourselves in a vulnerable position, right? And while we can easily be taken advantage of in some way, you know, we can be used in some way or something. So we can actually really only serve with heart and soul if we have such sheltering relationship in our life. If we know there is somebody there in our life who will make sure, you know, we get the balance right. You know, because also very easily we might have that experience that, you know, if we are eager to always serve, then very easily we get so much service, sometimes more than we can handle. Because it's always easy to ask somebody, you know, who is eager to serve, we know it gets done, right? And then sometimes we get so overloaded with service we can hardly even manage. So, and then we very easily, we lose the balance there, and we might be accepting too much or something. So unless we really have this assurance that, yes, I have a person there in my life who has no other interest except helping me in my spiritual development, and that person will make sure that I'm not taken advantage of in some way, or that I'm not used in some way, and he will let me know when actually I need a break or something. He will make sure that I also have my time to recharge, so I can go to India and recharge my batteries there or something. You know, if we have such sheltering relationship, then we can invest our heart in the service. But if this is not there, then we will hold back. We will think, hang on, so where am I here in that game? You know, and who is actually taking care of me here, that all my needs are met? We will be holding back. Is that understandable for you? Yes? Yes. So, and I think this is going on a lot, that we are not serving, we are not giving 90% or something. You know, we give maybe 10%, yeah, all right, a little bit I can do, but, you know, okay, it's all right, we have the whole protective mechanisms build up there, you know, to protect ourselves and this and that, right? Yeah, so we are often concerned, we think, oh, we need more devotees, we don't have enough devotees, you know, but no, we have so many devotees, but the problem is they're only serving with 10% energy, with 10% surrender. They're only giving 10% or 15%. That's the problem. We are not giving everything. We are easily holding back. And the main reason why we are holding back is if we don't have these sheltering relationships. That's the whole point. Yes, because, you know, if we really invest our heart, yeah, we put ourselves in a vulnerable position. We can very easily be disappointed, you know, we can be very easily somehow pained or something in some way. Yeah? So, and we are afraid of that, so that's why we rather hold back and don't invest so much our heart there. Right? Yes. Yeah, so, and then what happens is it's almost like a vicious circle. Because we don't have these sheltering relationships, therefore we don't serve with heart and soul, giving our very everything. And because of that, Krishna will not reveal himself so easily. Huh? So, and because Krishna is not revealing himself so easily, we don't have that faith that ultimately Krishna is the main protector. Right? Krishna, for most of us, is pretty remote at this point. We don't really have that faith that, yes, Krishna ultimately will protect me, he will take care of me. We don't have that really yet. So that's why we need, you know, that protecting, sheltering relationship. And that gives us that conviction, yes, I am sheltered here. And then as we serve with heart and soul, Krishna reveals himself more and our faith can grow that, yes, Krishna is there. Krishna is actually protecting us ultimately. So, but if that's not taking place, then we are kind of hovering on some lower level there of faith and service mood there. And we can't really develop that selfless service mood because of that lack of sheltering relationships, right? And as a result of that, Krishna doesn't reveal himself and therefore we don't have that faith. And because we don't have protecting and sheltering relationships, again, therefore we only serve with 5 or 10% investment here. And like that, we're just going in circles there on a lower level of service mood and almost zero realizations type thing. And we're not getting anywhere in our spiritual development. Yeah, you get what I'm saying? Yes? And I really have that suspicion this is going on in many devotees' lives. Many devotees' lives. You know? This vicious circle. And root cause is no sheltering relationships. And therefore we can't really give our heart and soul in service. We are holding back, you know, we are a little afraid, you know, and therefore Krishna doesn't reveal himself, we don't get any deeper realizations, the faith is not growing, and all right, we do something little somehow, you know, but nothing happens in our heart there. And then we might be losing taste altogether, and we feel like, all right, I've been around the temple for so many years, and okay, I've had enough, and I want to do my own thing, or whatever, you know. Yeah, and the root cause is this lack of sheltering relationships. That's the whole thing. Yes. And one interesting thing connecting with this is, we mentioned this morning a little bit, I was elaborating on this point, that a shelter giver should not have any managerial interests. Right? So, for many years I've been coming across this, that devotees were complaining that they feel exploited. And it took me a long time to understand this. I was always thinking, what's this nonsense? How can you feel exploited? You're serving Krishna. Krishna accepts your service. So what's the problem? How can you feel exploited? You know? And only a few years ago I realized the subtle thing. We tend to feel exploited when we don't have these sheltering relationships in our life. Then we can easily feel exploited. Because this morning we were elaborating a little bit that managing is such a tough service. For 10 years in my grihastha life, I was TP's wife. So I know all about it, the challenges of being a temple president or being his wife, and how difficult it is to make all the ends meet and pay all the bills and get all the services done and everything. It's a real challenge. So very easily, as a manager, we wear these managerial glasses and we see people in terms of management interest. Oh, there's a cook coming, just what we need. You know, oh, a pujari, ecstatic, and oh, a sankirtan devotee. And so we see easily people in terms of managerial needs. And if devotees only feel seen like that, you know, what services they can offer. But if they have that feeling, nobody is actually interested in me and my spiritual growth and development, that's what brings about this feeling of being used. It's a pretty subtle thing, you know. Of course, in the ultimate issue, our service is accepted by Krishna, but just because, you know, we don't have that vision and faith and understanding that Krishna is protecting and caring. So if the devotees around us, you know, we are mainly coming across this managerial vision and attitude towards us, we can easily feel used. But the point is, we cannot blame the managers. Because, as I'm saying, management is such a tough service. So we cannot blame the managers. We actually have to blame ourselves. We are the ones who did not endeavor to build these trusting, sheltering relationships. If we have such relationships in our life, then we will not feel used. Even though the temple president might have the managerial glasses on, well, that's his service, he's the temple president. Right? But if we have sheltering relationships, at least with one person where we know this one person has no other interest except my spiritual growth and development, And I can always go to that person and ask, oh, do you think I'm doing all right? And what do you think? Sometimes I feel a bit overburdened and stressed out and I feel I need a break. And what do you think? Am I just a mile, or, you know, do I really need maybe, you know, a trip to India or something? You know, if we don't have such a person in our life, that's when we feel, when this feeling of being used comes about. Took me quite a while to understand this more deeply. So, but what usually happens is that people blame the managers. But no, we can't blame them. We have to blame ourselves. We have to understand the importance of having these sheltering relationships in our life. And we have to endeavor for them. We have to look for them. Sometimes also devotees ask, you know, oh, well, but what if I can't find such relationship, you know, I can't find anybody in my yatra who can give me shelter. Well, it's a very similar principle as with finding guru. As we desire to find such relationship, as we desire that deeply in the heart, Krishna will make arrangement. He will connect us to the best right person. He will make sure we meet the right person at the right time who can play that role in our life. Same thing with guru. You know, sometimes people say, oh, I can't find guru. I don't know who to accept as guru. Usually it means we don't intensely desire to find, and that's why we can't see. But if we have that burning desire to find guru, then Krishna will give us the eyes to see who is the right person. And the same principle is there also on that level down in regards to sheltering relationships. If we understand the importance of having such relationships in our life, and we are actually desiring them, we are praying for them, oh please Krishna, I need some guidance, I need some, you know, this confidential friendship. I want such a person in my life who can actually guide me, who can help me to balance my spiritual practice. If we desire this, Paramatma is right there in the heart. He sees what we desire. And he immediately will arrange that we meet the right person. Like that. So yes, we have to understand the importance of such sheltering relationships in our life. We have to be clear in this, that without such relationships, it's very, very difficult to actually make progress. We have to be clear in that. Diksha Guru is just not enough, I'm sorry to say. You know, as I mentioned before, our Diksha Gurus often have thousands of disciples. We might only see our Diksha Guru once or twice a year or something. You know, a Diksha Guru cannot possibly know each and every person's, you know, practical situation in their life. He cannot. How can he if he has thousands of disciples? Not possible. So we need such sheltering relationships in our life. Absolutely. Yes, we have to clearly understand that. Without this understanding, very easily, you know, if we hear, yes, we should have a mentor or something, then this just remains some formality, some social thing or something. But within our heart, we are not really deeply taking shelter. We don't really develop such a relationship that we want to be corrected by this person. I was sharing this morning, I think, how even Niranjan Swami once said to me that one of the main problems for a Diksha Guru is that so often he would love to give a certain instruction to his disciple, but he can see he's not ready to accept it. And therefore he can't give it. That's his main problem. You know, so even towards our Diksha Gurus, we are not really taking shelter. We don't want to be corrected and disciplined by that person. Even towards our Diksha Gurus, it's more like a, you know, external formality thing there. But in the heart, we are maintaining our independence. We are not actually taking shelter. what to speak of a mentor or something, you know. Yes. Yes. Let me see what else I have here, which I might not have mentioned yet. Yeah, I mean, also another interesting point is that actually, really, to take shelter of Krishna, we need Guru. To take shelter of Guru, we actually need the devotees. This whole topic of shelter starts with the devotees around us. Unless we cultivate sheltering relationships amongst our devotees, very difficult to really take shelter of Guru. I have observed this many times, you know, that a devotee might face some testing situation, some calamity, but the person is not running to Guru and asking for advice. No, no, not taking shelter in Guru. No. There's too much of an ego thing there, you know, or what will he think, and I want to look like a fired-up disciple and this and that, and he will not understand me anyway, and then very easily we take shelter somewhere else, of our mind, of our false ego, of some bad habits, of the non-devotee parents, you know, so many other sources of so-called shelter we turn to, but we are not turning towards Guru, because it's much harder for the false ego to really reveal your shortcomings and struggles and fears to Guru than to a more, you know, confidential friend here in your community or something. So unless we really start with developing sheltering relationships amongst devotees on more our daily level, very difficult to take shelter of Guru actually. So we have to cultivate and practice that mood of taking shelter on that, you know, more immediate level. And then it will be also so much easier to take shelter of Guru when we are in some challenging situation there, you know. Yes. I'd like to just do a little personal exercise actually. Just turn to your neighbor and share, you know, whether you have such a sheltering relationship in your life. Where are you standing there? Do you have that in your life? That there is a person where you know this person has no other interest except helping me and my spiritual development, and I can go and reveal my innermost fears and struggles to that person and I get some good advice and some inspiration. Do I have such a relationship? Let's do a little bit of a self-assessment exercise here. Or is this completely foreign to me and, oh my God, I don't even have such a relationship. I've never had such a person in my life. Is it like that? Just get together in pairs. I usually prefer to share in pairs rather than sharing publicly, you know, because in pairs we can be more honest and the ego is not, you know, affecting us. Okay, Guru Pimanandi, Hari Hari Bol, Hari Hari Bol. Okay, so good to see that you all had something to share and don't even want to stop sharing. So let's hope it was to the topic. Let me see if we have any points of discussions, any comments, any questions. Yes, Prue.
You said that such a person even exists.
Say it again.
Does such a person even exist that you can open and express your heart? Does such a person even exist?
You don't know? You sound very doubtful. I mean, see, also the problem is, now we stop sharing. Arrival. Problem is, we are so traumatized. You know, we are traumatized by all kinds of painful experiences, being abandoned in so many ways. I always like to say materialistic culture is a culture of abandoning each other for sense gratification. Husband abandons wife, wife abandons husband, parents abandon children, children abandon parents and grandparents. Everybody is abandoning each other for the sake of sense enjoyment. So we might have all kinds of, you know, traumatic experiences of being abandoned, you know, and heart has been, you know, injured there and so on. But no, it does exist. I dare say it does. And just to give you a little outline, I mean, tomorrow is Ram Naomi, so tomorrow we will not continue on this discussion. But then Monday morning we will do the second part of this second lesson. This is a pretty interesting one. We will discuss how envy manifests towards seniors, towards equals, towards juniors. Yes, and then we will realize that envy is what blocks us the most from giving shelter and from accepting shelter. When we are envious, we cannot give shelter, we cannot accept shelter. Envy is the main stumbling block of, you know, giving and accepting shelter. And as we were establishing materialistic culture where sense gratification is the all in all, it always brings along envy and competition. So the more materialistic life and its culture becomes, the more the whole envy is increased and the more it is difficult to give shelter and to accept shelter. That will be the discussion for Monday morning. Then Monday evening we start discussing with the qualities which we have to have in order to be eager for shelter. And there we already realize that those qualities which are required to be keen for shelter, a materialist doesn't strive for them at all. They are not wanted and aspired for qualities, actually. So that's why for us people from the West, you know, surrounded by materialistic culture, not so easy to actually be keen to take shelter. We don't really even have the necessary qualifications. We will discover that. And then another really important topic, we will probably get on Tuesday or Wednesday to that. I think Tuesday evening there's some ladies program planned, right? So Tuesday evening there will be no seminar. But then we still have Wednesday and Thursday. So, and then the most important, or not most important, but highly important discussion will be the qualifications we need to have in order to give shelter. And then, you know, that's very important. So we take shelter at a qualified person. We have to know what to look for. And there we will realize, yeah, not so easy to actually have that qualification. We have a whole list of qualities we will discuss in all details and that's very important. So we know we take shelter at the right source, and also we know what we have to strive for, what qualities we have to develop so that we one day can be a very, you know, good shelter giver to others. So that whole discussion we have ahead of us. So then, you know, hopefully we get more insights into your question of, yes, does such a person exist who we can actually reveal our mind to? No, it does, but not so easy to find, but also we have to qualify ourselves also to eventually get there. Actually, we can say this giving and accepting shelter, it's a whole churning process. It really churns the anattas in both sides. Even for the person giving shelter, it will come to the surface, whether we have some subtle expectations there, or we become possessive, or he is my counselee, he's my man, and so on. You know, it all comes to the surface, you know. So it's not that there's no problems to be expected. Of course there's problems to be expected, but the problems are only there because we are not selfless. You know, we have some kind of motivations and material attachments there and so on, and that comes to the surface, you know. So it's a whole churning process, because sometimes I come across this argument that people say, oh, yeah, mentoring system, we've tried that, doesn't work. No, you know, this is a really, you know, a really superficial understanding, you know. Now, it does work. We are the ones who are maybe not so qualified to give shelter, to accept shelter, and the anattas come to the surface. So that's what we want. You know, it's a very powerful process to churn the anattas. And by the way, a marriage relationship, it is giving and accepting shelter. And marriage problems, why are they there? Because we are not selfless servant. If we were all selfless servant, then there would be no marriage problems. So again, it's a whole churning process of anattas. Yes. And I mean, thank God we haven't gotten that far yet that we say, oh yeah, marriage, we tried it, doesn't work, no need for marriage. You know, I mean, outside in the material world, that's the attitude where people have arrived at, that people don't get married anymore. But we, thank God we're not there, you know, yet, hopefully. Yeah, so problems are to be expected. It's a whole churning process, you know. Yeah, it helps both sides to actually move forward and to become more qualified and more selfless and, you know. Yes?
I will have the opposite question about you can have more shelter relationships in your life, or this is just a naive way of working towards your spiritual progress.
Yeah, I mean, you can have sheltering relationships on all different levels. You know, you can have sheltering relationships on a more daily level than maybe, you know, in your country, but maybe in another city you know somebody who really inspires you and shows some interest in your spiritual development, and so then it can be in a more international level, somebody you met, you know, who you want to develop a bit more of a deeper relationship with, you know, who you might be seeing two or three times at different festivals or something. So there can be sheltering relationships on all different levels. It's not just restricted to one relationship. But one thing I have to add, that we should not have many sheltering relationships just to avoid, you know, the discipline and correction and just play one against the other, and if I don't like that advice, all right, I can always go to that person and see what I can find there, and you know, and it's a similar thing there with gurus too. Yeah, we can have a Diksha guru, we can have Shiksha gurus, but Shiksha gurus, you know, we should actually only accept after some time of really taking discipline and training from our Diksha guru. And if we accept too many Shiksha gurus too early, it can also be just a mechanism to avoid the discipline. Huh? That, oh, if we don't like that person's, that guru's instruction, we run to our Shiksha guru and see what he says and so on, you know. So no, it should not, you know, be accepted in that mood, that we have many relationships just to make sure we get what we want and we get the instruction advice that we are looking for. You know, that would be the wrong mood. But yes, otherwise there can be so many relationships. And all right, we might not find, you know, the perfect person who gives shelter in all regards, in all aspects of spiritual practice. You know, we might have one person who we turn to in one question, and then another person gives us guidance and inspiration in another aspect of spiritual practice, you know, like that. So we might not find, you know, all aspects of shelter and guidance in one person, but in several sources there, and all of them together form one sheltering body type thing, you know, like that. What else? Yes?
Hare Krishna. I'd like to ask a question, because you mentioned it's quite scary to hear that this example from Niranjana Swami, that even he is spiritual master, he cannot help his disciple because of lack of trust. And you also mentioned because of our trauma from the past, it's like, so what is our, because we also have to become qualified to accept a qualified shelter. So what is our responsibility? What we need to do to get out of this lack of trust? Because it is our story, it's our life, it's our decisions, but still we have to go out. Or is it because spiritual master, in that case, I will say, I hope you will not get wrong, it's not enough. Because, you know, so what is our way? I mean, what we need to deal with? I mean, what we need to do to go out of this?
Okay. Well, first of all, let's be clear that we are all in this material world because we want to be independent. That's our disease. We want to be independent from Krishna. So that's so deeply rooted there in our hearts. And it is also promoted so much, you know, through that materialistic environment we are in. Did you listen to the first session where we were looking at the relationships in materialistic culture and spiritual culture, that they're very different?
It's exploding and serving.
Yeah, but yeah, we made a whole list there saying, you know, in materialistic culture people push each other out of the way and there's competition there and no respect and everybody's busy with their own thing, just running. More selfish, impersonal, and. You know, so we are surrounded by that whole influence, that propaganda, that, oh, yes, we can all do it, self-made man here, and, you know, if we just kick everybody out of the way, then we will get there. That's the whole propaganda and mood around us. So not so easy to transform that. And hearing about the importance of a topic, that's always the first step. We have to hear. That's why I'm giving this whole seminar. You know, that's why I like to give it. I feel such urgency to get this out. Actually, I'm just now working on putting the seminar in book form, just so it, you know, this can easier spread. Because I see it as such an important thing. And we are losing so many devotees. We have been losing so many nice devotees because of this thing, because we did not recognize this importance of sheltering relationships. You know, people come, they hang around for a while, and then they fade away again because of this lack of sheltering relationships. We've been losing so many people. You know, so we have to put an end to this and really keep people happy and enthusiastic in the fire of devotional service. And unless we have these sheltering relationships, not much chance. Not much chance. That's the whole thing. So, and the point is, as I was saying, you know, unless we develop these sheltering relationships with devotees around us, that's why it is so much more difficult than to take shelter of Guru. So just the fact that this is one of the main problems Diksha Gurus have, that the disciples are not actually really taking shelter, they're not eager for this correction and discipline. Very often we tend to make our own decisions without consulting, and then with formality we go and ask for the blessings, but it's already decided. You know, this is not getting the blessings. I once was in a darshan as a third person there of one Mataji with her guru, and she had decided she wanted to live in Vrindavan, young unmarried girl. And the guru, he was not so happy about it, and he was trying to tell her, well, maybe this, maybe that. But he could see she had made up her mind. She wanted to live in Vrindavan. You know, and then after half an hour of back and forwards, well, then he was saying, all right, try. You know, what could he say? And she went out the room, hoo-hoo, my guru wants me to live in Vrindavan. He gave his blessings. You know, that was her understanding of the whole situation. But she cheated herself. What did she get? No, she didn't get his blessings. You know, she just got a cheating version, basically, because her guru saw she was not ready to accept. She had made up her mind. So what could he do? Just not to damage the relationship, he just went along with it. All right, you can try, you know. But she was convinced, yes, my guru's instruction is, I should live in Vrindavan, you know. Yeah, so, and these things come about because we are not cultivating the relationships on a more, you know, immediate level. So we have to start on that level. First step is always hearing about the importance, then desiring, understanding, yes, I need this. And also later when we discuss the qualities in order to give shelter, the main and foremost thing is we have to be sheltered ourselves. Only then we can give shelter to others. We can only give something to others which we have ourselves. So unless we are sheltered, we cannot give shelter to others. So it makes it very clear. And as we were saying, unless we come to this point where we reach out to those in an inferior position, our life will be damn superficial. So if we don't want to live a superficial life forever, we have to start, you know, building sheltering relationships, being sheltered ourselves, and only then we can give shelter to others. So, once we understand all the ins and outs and all from all different sides why this is so important, well, I hope this, you know, will bring about some understanding and some desire, you know, of looking for these relationships. And I mean, yes, of course, because, you know, as we can hopefully understand, it is not so natural for us, for most of us, to, you know, have this giving and accepting shelter in our life. So obviously it's advisable to have some little bit of a structure there, some little bit of facilitation there, you know, to help. So, and that's why a mentoring system is so helpful. You know? And as far as I've heard, you have started with it already in some way. But I'm simply hoping that this seminar gives some deeper inspiration why it is really so important, and also a bit of fine-tuning. Because later also, towards the end of the whole seminar, we will discuss some practical aspects, how to actually start, how to really make it effective. But we'll keep that for later, but that will be the final thing. Because ideally, this should not be just some interesting and, you know, interesting food for thought here, but then we leave it all as it is. No, ideally, there should be also some application coming. That somebody, you know, feels inspired to take up this mission more deeply, to inspire people and to, you know, preach about it and, you know, like that. Okay, I'm looking at the watch. It is 25 past 8. Maybe we should leave it at that. One little announcement I do want to make, because just recently I made a humble attempt of publishing my first little book, Spill to Culture, Krishna's Divine System. It's not about this topic, but it's about other very highly relevant issues. And yes, it basically gives deeper insights into Vaishnav culture being Krishna's culture, being Krishna's system to establish harmony and stability in the world. And all our social problems we are facing, like divorce and violence towards women, abuse, child abuse, single motherhood, all of these problems, they're actually all global reactions for not following Krishna's system. In Krishna's system, they don't have any room, actually. They don't exist. But our disease is that we think our modern systems are better than Krishna's system. That's the disease we are carrying. We think our Krishna system is outdated, it's old-fashioned. Who will accept Krishna consciousness if we present things with Krishna's system? Yeah, well, Krishna's system and the Kali Yuga system, they are very different. They are like day and night. You know? Yes. If we want to be a true spiritualist, we have to have the courage to go against, you know, 180 degrees against all the modern trends and worldviews. Yes. And Kali Yuga is rapidly advancing. And the world is actually looking for an alternative. There's so many people out there who realize something is going wrong in the world. And we have access to Krishna's system. So if we can apply things in our ISKCON society, that will make Lord Chaitanya Sankirtan movement very powerful. So that's basically the essence of this little book. So if you want to get one for €9, it can be yours. And I would be very happy to put one of these books into your hands and into your life and hope that it will give you something. Okay, so tomorrow is Ram Naomi, and Monday morning and Monday evening we'll continue with the whole discussion. Okay, thank you so much for your eagerness to turn the topic.